Thanks for listening to the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Carm Capriotto here, host of Remarkable Results Radio, the Town Hall Academy, and AftermarketWeekly.com. My guests today are lifelong partners, an awesome team, husband and wife. John and Karen Manilis both attended the same college and became successful at their careers for 15 years as electrical engineers. They decided to take a huge change and a pay cut to start their own shop. And they took on the challenge and uncertainties with low capital, and they grew their shop from one in 2004 to an amazing seven shops in 2019. John and Karen are providing you a ton of insights from their journey to seven stores. Now, before we delve into this great discussion with John and Karen, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Napa Car Vantage, for their support and for making this show possible. Hey, don't forget, Remarkable Results Radio is proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the upcoming 2021 Napa Expo. Join Napa in Las Vegas, February 1st through the 4th, 2021. I know you know the dates, but if you don't, please write them down. Discover the latest innovations there at the Expo in the auto care industry. You won't be disappointed. This is an event you sure don't want to miss. Contact your Napa store to learn more. Hey, I've got a survey up at remarkableresults.biz/survey. Very short, and I welcome your input. Please help me know what you want and need from the Aftermarket's premier podcast. And thanks so much.
Part of being a business owner and the responsibility of being a business owner is to absolutely 100% know your numbers and know them in a timely fashion, weekly, daily, monthly. And certainly having a P&L once a month is bare minimum. You're playing a sport without a scoreboard.
Hey, once again, thanks for tuning in. And if you're not listening mobile, then simply get yourself a free podcast listening app at remarkableresults.biz/listen. Hey, have you seen the newest shop tour from aftermarketweekly.com? Well, last week we were at Swanson's in Granville, Michigan. You know, it's live every Tuesday at noon, and you can watch it live on the website, aftermarketweekly.com, or find every archived episode there. Not only interesting information on the business of the aftermarket, but the shop tour. How cool is that? Don't miss it. Now enjoy Karen and John Manilis as they share their 16-year journey growing their single location to seven, and they see more opportunities in the future. Hey, warm welcome to John and Karen Manilis from Auto Care Plus and Euro Care Plus out in the great region called New England, right?
Correct.
Yes, correct.
New Hampshire, and I think one in Maine?
Yep.
Cool. Husband and wife. I love interviewing husband and wives. Just love it. You guys have worked together since day one, and there's a really cool secret about what day one is about, in my opinion. And so my question is, how does a husband and wife who met in college, who both have a Bachelor of Science degree in electrical engineering, become shop owners?
It's not a normal story, not the typical shop owner that I've come to know and meet over the years with typically a technician that wants to own his own shop and figures out how to become a business owner. For us, at least for me, I'll speak for me, I was, and Karen can probably attest, that I was a little bit fed up with corporate America, and I was traveling all over the world. Our kids were younger at the time. After so many nights in the hotel room, every week was in a hotel room. That gets old pretty quick. People think it's glamorous, but it's really not. I guess being a little bit cranky at home, and Karen said, do what you want to do.
We got to fix this.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do was be my own boss, I thought. So I started kicking around the idea in my cubicles, you know, looking for businesses that were on, you know, for sale on BizBuy, you know, sell.com or various of those types of things. I wanted to actually open an engineering firm, and then I realized that that's probably going to entail a lot of upfront costs and high salaries that I didn't know how I was going to pay for. So I decided to look at restaurants and flower shops, and I was literally looking at anything that was for sale. I don't know. I came across an auto repair shop for sale and local to us, and thought, well, I love cars. I've been working on cars since I was a kid. I'm not a mechanic by any means, but I certainly know my way around a vehicle. I think while I was traveling a lot, Karen and I both know a lot about cars. But, you know, sometimes we had to take our cars in for a recall or for service or whatever. And Karen would always attest that even if it was not even automotive related, if it was just a guy's field, you know, she could tell you about Radio Shack. But just going into a place and being talked down to because you're a woman. And so we thought, there was a lot of room for improvement in that auto industry and the motorcycle industry repair shop. I considered that as well. I thought they were even ruder to everybody that came through the door. So customer service was not what I thought was where it could be. And I thought, well, let's try that. So
you felt you could make a difference?
I did. And I thought we could definitely treat women nicer.
And did it happen?
I like to believe it did. Being an electrical engineer and having kids at home, I ended up switching to contract work, go to the local Radio Shack, and I'd walk in there and instantly I'd get attitude and they'd come over, you know, I can help you. You obviously need help. And I was like, no, I'm actually all set. I know what I need. And I even had one person say, well, why would you need that? And this is what I'm doing. And I ended up having to explain myself. Yeah, same thing in auto repair stores. I felt like you walk in and obviously right off the bat, you can't know what you're talking about or anything because you're female.
Remember when we tried to buy your Acadia and what the sales manager told you? You're indecisive.
I was indecisive, yeah. Yet I went in saying, this is what I want, and, you know, color this. And he wanted me to go into one that was on the lot, and so he turned around and told me that I was indecisive.
Hasn't big box corporate America figured this out yet?
Yeah, you would think. You would think.
And again, I wouldn't make an example of everybody's like this, but by and large, I mean, we can't lie to ourselves. Our industry... And, you know, again,
it's male dominating.
Yeah.
You know?
But the whole point of this podcast is to raise all boats, right? I mean, that's what we're trying to do is to run an industry that isn't, you know, the backyard greasy mechanic mentality that you know, you don't have any brains, so go ahead and work on cars or join a trade.
Yeah. Honestly, there's the bulk of our clientele is female. You know, it's 60%, 70%?
Yeah, 70%.
Is female. Yeah. And they're the ones that are making the decisions for the household. Yet when they come in, we're not going to treat them well. So it doesn't make any sense. There's no premise to it. So by having a female be in the shop, be on the wall, I've even just, as we've grown, I've been stopped by female customers who have said I was hesitant coming into a new location, yet I turned and I looked at, because we always have our pictures on the wall of the staff and John and I as well, and to see a female picture on the wall, I said, well, this place is different. I'm going to be treated different. And I was. And so to hear that makes the world a difference because, I mean, no one should ever be treated any different regardless of any of the reasons.
Any service advisors that are female and or technicians?
We do. We have in the past had one female technician. We do have female service advisors.
You got probably four right now.
Yeah, right now we have four.
Is that important?
I think it makes a difference on the counter, honestly.
Yeah.
From a woman's perspective, that Karen can tell about that. But I can also tell you that Karen's had her share of men that came in and instantly feel, I want to talk to a man. And she.
Oh
can-
yeah, I used to be on when we had one location. I used to be answering the phones as well as helping John out on the counter as needed. So if John went off to go deal with the technician and someone came in, I would go out front. And same thing. Yeah, I need to talk to a man. I need to talk to someone else. And then all they were doing was calling and booking an appointment. So it wasn't like it was anything extraordinary.
That's right up the woman's alley, Karen.
Yeah, exactly. I did great at that. Yeah. But, it's nothing. Again, I grew up around men predominantly. I mean, I had three older brothers. I had a father who I tried to pull the female card. Dad, I'm a girl. And I don't care. So I had to tear down engines, rebuild carburetors, cut the grass.
He toughed you up, huh?
Yeah. And actually, at the time, I was angry about it. You know, honestly, it's a jack of all trades that I have knowledge on. You know, there's so much that I can do. But going into engineering, in college was tough. The comments that were made to me, they were tough to take. And then also working in engineering, I had problems with certain figures. And I got through them and it helped to build the tougher outer core that I have, but also gain a tremendous amount of empathy for others as well.
So you guys were engineers living on an engineer's salary. Did you have to take a pay cut to buy your first job?
Yes.
I think we went from about $150,000 combined down to 50,000 our first year.
It wasn't even that, but yeah.
It wasn't a good financial decision, but
no.
So we thought at the time. I mean, it's turned out to be probably the greatest thing we've ever done.
It was very difficult. Like, again, we had a home and we had three children. I think when we bought, they were, 9, 10,
yeah,
6, and 3. So, yeah, the oldest was, she must have been 10, 6, and 3. So it was challenging. And then to put the risk out there, leap of faith, not knowing what the outcome, and walk away from something we both were doing for 15 years.
Not to mention incompetent feeling because you don't know what you're even doing.
We had no idea. And I'll never forget the very first day that John and I, we purchased the Merrimack facility. The old owner, Danny Ryan, was there and his wife, Debbie, and turned and the phone rang and turned and said, "John, you're up. It's yours now." And he looked and go, I don't want to do this. I don't want to answer the phone. It's, you know, we're out of our comfort zone, both of us. And we're pulling up software that, you know, there's a lot of software that John and I knew in engineering, but this was something completely different.
And was that the moment, John, that you went to Danny and said, "Can you stick around?"
We actually had that up front.
Well, we tried to get it up front for a year and he wouldn't go more than 3 months. But
yeah.
You know. Lo and behold, it's 16 years in now, and he's our operations manager.
Yeah, he's still with us. Key player.
He doesn't have the stress that, you know, he had as an owner, but he's getting a little bit more back. I think maybe he's feeling a little bit. But
well, because now we have so many locations, too. And
but we still have to pay the bills. So.
Did he ever come to you and say, "God, you guys make this look easy"?
No, I don't think so. But he I think he's proud of us. I think he's proud of the company.
So you have a store and you said, "Hey, this is cool. Let's do another one."
Well, no, it's not that way. there was 8 years of grinding it out. And literally my first few weeks there was, and then the first probably 6 years there was me on the counter by myself, grinding it out 12 hours a day, trying to get prepared for tomorrow's repair orders. And this was a busy, busy store. I mean, make no mistake about it. This was, you know, there was me, Karen in the back answering the phones, doing the bookwork. Me on the front counter handling the customers, Karen handling when she could. Danny playing technician again, and one other technician. And we did have Danny's wife for a little while, for probably 3 or 4 or 5 months, I don't know. So she helped us transition. But it was a grind. It was really long days. And then you would do, you know, owner stuff when you went home before you fell asleep on the couch while you had the laptop going. Yeah, we had no intentions in the beginning phases of a second shop. And immediately when we got in, Danny forced me to get into a bottom line impact group, which I did. I've been in that
20 group.
I've been in that group since 2005, the whole time. I mean, we bought the place in 2004. I think 9 months later, I was in the group.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, John and Karen share more of their disciplines that has brought them 7 stores in 16 years. Hey, it's Carm to talk to you about how telematics can benefit your NAPA Auto Care Center. Now, thanks to NAPA's recent partnership with CarVantage, it's easy for you to connect with your customers and help to eliminate their stress over car care. The CarVantage program lets you message customers directly on their smartphone about any action they need to take, and it's all done automatically based on their car's actual health and mileage. It works like this. You provide customers with a CarVantage sensor that plugs into their vehicle and then connects via Bluetooth to their mobile phone. Then the CarVantage dashboard allows you to set up automated marketing campaigns that target customers based on specific triggers, like when they're approaching their next maintenance interval, for example, or whenever a check engine light is detected. Customers, well, they'll receive a mobile push notification and or email when they meet the criteria you specify. You can encourage them to schedule a service or send a coupon relevant to the problems they're experiencing. Now, to make an appointment at your shop, all the customer has to do is select the service, a time, and a date. CarVantage even sends you a snapshot of the vehicle's health prior to the vehicle's appointment so you can plan for the visit. Customers love CarVantage. It gives them peace of mind and the best experience in the market. Plus, CarVantage is free to them. And for you, a special offer only for NAPA Auto Care Centers lets you give CarVantage a try at a very affordable price. And it even includes free sensors. Other plans and enhancements are also available. Even more important, CarVantage helps you increase customer retention and customer spend. Talk to your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store to find out more about what CarVantage can do for your business. plus the hundreds of other things the Auto Care program has to offer. The point that everyone makes with me over and over again is that the 20 group, the peer group, the network that I'm part of, the coach that I'm with, has made such an impact in their world. They would stop, and then they would realize that they would falter a bit, and then they would come back so that they could get the accountability piece going. Big impact on you, huh?
Oh, I mean, I think it's the sounding board. And it wasn't just the coach. I mean, the coach was integral, obviously, but it was the camaraderie with other shop owners, you know, that are doing the same thing you're doing every day, right? Living the grind and knowing that there's better ways to do things. I learned a lot of things from mentors outside of the group, but in the industry as we went. And that's when we just, you know, being able to bounce ideas off of things and see what other people are doing. I've always thought, you know, surround yourself with people who are successful and you'll be successful. And that's what we've tried to do. And, you know, and we've emulated those successes. And, you know, sometimes we've emulated some not so good ideas too, but until you do it yourself, sometimes you don't realize it wasn't a good idea. It seemed like one at the time. So yeah, I mean, I think you need the push or the, you know, my coach used to tell me all the time, you need to hire a service advisor. You need to hire a service advisor. I said, how can I afford one? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and then I would never go back on the front counter again, ever. Yeah, I love dealing with the customers, but not on that day-to-day grind like that.
After 8 years grinding away, you grew, and now you have 7 locations. And I want to talk about, when is it right to grow, and did you have enough processes in place so that you could scale? And the other thought in my mind, I think you put up one from scratch business, but you bought the other ones from going places. Am I right?
Correct.
My point is I want you to share what you looked at when, you know, if with the financials in order, you know, and I don't care about the extreme details of the transaction, but was the owner prepare enough for you to make a decision to buy the business? So let's start with your growth in store two. You found an opportunity, obviously, but were your processes and systems ready to scale?
Oh, no, not at all. We had no idea what we were getting into, so that was kind of fell in our lap. I mean, a broker had froze us and wanted to know if I wanted to buy this property. And so we bought the property. It was occupied by a transmission shop. So I thought, oh, we'll just be landlords for a while. And then someday we'll open a second store. And then, of course, you know, Karen was losing sleep at night bad because the guy wasn't paying his rent.
And I think we both were.
Yeah.
I don't think you could just say me.
No, I know. But it really affected her, I thought. So I said, well, I got to do something. And it took us 9 months to get him evicted out of there. And then we tried to salvage the stuff that was there and, you know, everything. They were so loyal to him for some reason for stealing from him. But anyway, it's a long story. But anyway, yeah, so we ended up starting our second store. We found a manager that said no to the job, I think, 3 times. I kept being persistent because I really wanted him. He's still with us, I don't know, 10 whatever 10 years later. You know, he was our district manager at one point. Right now he's running our newest build out in Derry, New Hampshire. So it's good to have somebody like that on your team when you grow, because he was able to be a sponge from me for our processes, because I was in the day-to-day grind with him. To the point where he gets sick of me, you know, tripping over his shoulder when he was on the phone. I think he kicked me out once or twice saying, yeah, I can handle this. But that's when we started, you know, being successful in 2 locations. And, you know, I started thinking, wow, this might be okay. And then, you know, but we were still, in my mind, not ready. And that store took a little while to get going from zero, because it was basically a brand new store with no customers.
We should interject, though, that we actually went to go see a mentor of ours who was having a multi-shop meeting. It actually was a weekend at his, he's got a ranch in Georgia. It was vital, I believe, for both of us to be there and listen. The ideas and what it takes to be multi-shop owners, because this was a person who's done it. He's had 60 shops in his past. I think presently he's 20 or so. We both became very enthusiastic in listening to him, and as well as his other speakers that he had there. And we looked at each other and said, you know what, we actually could do this. I think we could do this. Then we brought it back. We were actually attending with some of our Blake friends and members, and they too wanted to increase as well to multiple locations. And we all kind of started to do this, but bouncing things off each other and still going back to our mentor there as well. Everybody told us, if you're going to do two stores, you got to go straight to three stores.
Really?
Really. And I said, well, I was told the same thing about children. And it really was, one of us could handle one kid, one of us could handle the other, and then the third one's out running around everywhere. And it was, so I said, I feel like it's going to be the same thing with the third store. But what it actually turned out to be was that the third store does make you streamline, and those processes, it becomes truly vital that you get those processes in place. And so you are doing the cookie cutters from store one, store two to store three. And it really does actually discipline.
That's what I've heard, Karen, over and over again from multi-shop owners. We jumped into two, not knowing we really should or we shouldn't. And then by the time we got to three, we would have never done three had we not learned how to scale, brought in the right processes, brought in the right systems, because two is a big jump and three is monumental. That what I hear a lot from other people is that when they go to three without good systems and processes, that's when they start faltering bad, if they didn't put that at the top of their list.
Agreed. I do. I see that. And then, honestly, after that, I won't say it's been smooth, because, you know, obviously it's not smooth. You're posed with different problems and issues and challenges. But, yeah, going from three to four to five, that transition is a little easier because you do have those processes in place.
Hey, when you and John drive home from work, is there a special place 2-3 miles from home that you say, let's not talk business anymore?
We probably should. We actually, at this point, a lot of times we're in different locations. We did do a corporate location. We're still off in different locations, and then we come together. But we unfortunately do bring it up at the dinner table. We do discuss business probably, maybe a little more than we should. But we're trying to learn as we get older that, you know, we do have to leave it, but it's hard. It's constant. It's almost a 24/7 type of business where, granted, we're not open on Sundays, so when people go home.
I think work-life balance is overrated. I mean, I think that's an individual opinion. I think everybody's work-life balance is, some are 50-50, some are 80-20, some are 100-0. I mean, I would tell you, it's whatever makes you happy. And it doesn't have to be what the next door neighbor does or what the fellow shop owner does. That's an individual decision, and you have to decide for you and your family if it's working or not.
But you guys are making it work.
We do.
We make it work, and some days are better than others, right?
So yeah, some days are more challenging.
We talked about store number two, and of course, scaling to store number three is one of the bigger moves. But then from then on, you're at seven shops.
I guess let me give you an example of what I think, I guess, drives me. I can't speak for Karen, but for me, I want to keep growing individually, personally, you know, professionally, all that. And I find that I'm most engaged and interested when I am outside of my comfort zone and learning. And learning is a never-ending thing for me. And I also look back at, you know, we do a lot of wake surfing. We have a new boat. And I think what I enjoy the most is learning that new skill, right? Then when you master that skill, like I was a master at baseball playing hockey, you try to go to that next level, right? You try to get another skill in that area. And I think I enjoy teaching. I enjoy mentoring. When we're out in the boat, I enjoy teaching the person who's never surfed to surf. And it's very exciting and rewarding when they get up on that board, right? And for me, it's the same thing with growing shops. Do I need the money? No. I just love the challenge. Can I do it? And when that gets boring, I guess, then I'll stop.
So, John, you wake up every day saying, what am I going to learn today?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy pushing myself to the edge. So, and seeing what happens when you get over the edge. Lo and behold, the earth is round, so you don't fall off. You just keep going.
So. Great. How do you rate your intuition? Is your intuition strong?
I think it's calculated and logical. And Karen is there to ground me a lot, but you know, I look
strong.
At numbers. Yeah, but I look at numbers, and I know the numbers don't lie. And when I can prove the numbers out in my head and on paper that they really work, I'm pretty sure if we go in there with our process, we're only going to improve it. So
we actually drove up to the first store, which obviously is your biggest leap, is your first store. And so we were driving up to just check it out. I looked at John and I said, I see us here. I feel it and I see us here, and this is our future. And I don't know why, it just felt right. And other stores have felt right. Some, when we go there, I go, yeah, I'm not feeling it. This isn't working. So I don't know. No explanation, called female intuition. I have no idea.
When you felt it wasn't working, did you buy it?
No, there was one that I questioned, and we did buy it. And it has been a bit of a chore at times.
But yes. We're making it work, right?
We are making it work. Yeah. We now have a staff in there that is actually making it work, that have a teamwork drive at this point, and so it's working.
When you make the decision to grow or to acquire another location or to build one or whatever the case may be, I know full well in my head that I'm going to have to roll up my sleeves and go to work for an extended period of time. And I'm prepared for that mentally. Once they learn how to surf, you kind of don't even pay attention to what they're doing back there anymore. Because that's kind of what I say. When you grow the shop to the point where you get the right staff, yeah, you don't babysit it anymore. And you let them take the reins. But I know that don't happen overnight.
Cool. You just mentioned a few moments ago, if the numbers are there, you're a numbers guy. And part of the problem inside of our industry, and I'd love you to try to tackle that, is I've got no great financial statements. People don't know their numbers. They can't even present you numbers if they're ready to sell you the business. What kind of advice can you give?
The most important thing to know is the numbers. And, you know, people say, well, I'm not an accountant. I'm not this. You weren't a business owner, but you're figuring it out, right? So part of being a business owner and the responsibility of being a business owner is to absolutely 100% know your numbers inside and out to the point and know them in a timely fashion, like weekly, daily, monthly. And certainly having a P&L once a month is bare minimum. And so a lot of guys don't know that. You're playing a sport without a scoreboard. And, you know, it's the third period. There's 2 minutes left in the hockey game. You're down 4-3. You know what you got to do. If it's the third period or the second period or the first period and there's no score, you don't have any idea what the score is, why are you playing?
Well, what we've found frightening is the businesses that you ask how they're doing and they say, well, if there's cash in the cash register, we're doing good. And it's like, oh.
And that money's spoken for.
Yeah, that's scary.
And being in the benchmark, you know, being in these 20 groups is, I think, you know, one learning curve that you have to understand what your numbers are supposed to be, what the industry looks like, and try to, you know, overachieve that and at least get to where you need to be profitable, or it's not going to be fun.
Well, a key factor in those 20 groups is the accountability. So the accountability makes you stay on top of everything as well.
I'm a new member in a 20 group, John, and you and Karen are there. And I come up to you and says, wow, you got 7, you're going on your 8th store. I really want to get out. I mean, look at me, I got some wrinkles, I'm getting tired. What do you recommend I do in order to, in the next few years, prepare my business for sale? Because you've been a buyer, I think you'd be perfect to tell our audience, because our audience, 55, even 59-year-old average age, everyone wants to retire in the next couple of years. The opportunities out there are great, but they're not maybe sure that they can get what they could, a real decent number for their business.
First off, what do they want to get up for their business? And then work towards achieving that end goal. And it starts with the numbers again, but, you know, in back calculating it in. But somebody like me is going to go in and say, you know, your business is worth 2.5, you know, on the low end to 5 times, you know, your net profit. There's a various formulas. You can look at, you know, gross sales as well. But for me, you know, I'm going to advise that guy to clean up his books, make sure that he's reporting all of his sales, make sure he's not hiding cash. There's so many things that people do to avoid paying taxes. And that's not going to make his business look profitable to me. And he's not going to be able to sell it to us. We've had guys like this who are hiding cash and, you know, oh yeah, we have all this money. You could be selling drugs on the side. Your wife could be a millionaire. I have no idea where you get your money, but it's not on these books. You know, spend the next 2 or 3 years getting your books in line with the industry and with what buyers are looking for.
John, look at this property. Don't worry about what my numbers say. Just bring your butt in here. You're a great businessman. Take over this location. Give me $1 million.
You know that gut feeling? Those are the ones I run away on.
I approach it from strictly a numbers standpoint. And yes, there's a gut feeling, of course. And, you know, looking at how their operation is run, looking at the facility and how it's kept. You know, it's like anything else. Are you going to drop your car off if the parking lot is, you know, the trees are growing up over the windows and the doors and nobody's trimming, you know, the lawn and the bushes or any of that? I mean, you know, it's curb appeal, right? You buy a house that way, you buy a car that way. Do you sell your car without, you know, vacuuming it and waxing it?
Well, we've also looked at businesses and realized that somebody, you know, has to be, the numbers aren't matching right. So whether somebody's taking it somewhere, so we're looking at their software that they use, the shop management tool in the shop, the software that has all their data there, and then we're comparing it to their QuickBooks file, which is their accounting software file, and the numbers are skewed tremendously. So obviously there's something wrong there, and that's a big flag. Any owner of any business should be comparing the software that they use on the day-to-day dailies to their accounting software. And if they're skewed, then there's a flag. Something's wrong.
Right. And then, of course, we go and compare that, you know, to their tax returns when we're looking to purchase. And
exactly.
Sometimes those are wildly different.
Great advice. I appreciate that. And every once in a while, I want my guests to go into the deep end a little bit to really try to nail the importance of having good financials and knowing your numbers. So you guys are in the used car business too at every location or just a couple?
3 locations out of the 7 have dealer licenses. It isn't for everybody, and it's really it's a tough business for me because, you know, I pride ourselves on our service side of the things. And, you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We do our best to look the vehicles over. But, you know, in order to get them ready for sale and ready for me and my, you know, be asleep at night, we often lose money getting it prepared and getting to sell. And I'm just not a used car guy. Simple as that.
It's not our primary business either. So.
It's a complementing business. It's great for, you know, your customer base who, all, you know, trusts you and wants to buy a car from you and wants to get a kid's first car or whatever. And it's great to have the license to do those kinds of things because they intimately trust you. And I know I want to give them the best, you know, vehicle I can give them, knowing it's a used car. It's, you know, not guaranteed for life.
Eurocar Plus, was that a new strategy that you wanted to try? Are you going to build on that brand?
It was something I wanted to try. I think Karen and I both thought it was a good idea. It's not as successful as I wish or hoped it would be. We've been at it for 3 years now, and it really is a niche market, if you will, and it really does have a following, but the numbers are not large enough. At least we're not cracking into it. I mean, we're making slow progress year after year after year, but there's not enough customers out there that we found. And maybe it's going to take 30 years to grow, but I don't have that kind of time. So
I'm a little worried that we're maybe pigeonholing is the word I keep using. Instead of having all makes and models, by just taking on that, then, you know, technicians, all that, it's falling into line. It's keeping us limited.
AutoCare Plus, you have a proven brand. You could just lay up over that. But so many Euro shops seem to, the guys that I know seem to do really, really well. When you went in, did you look at the population of the vehicles in the town?
We did. We did. And I looked at the Euro stuff too, and we've been marketing to them. And frankly, this was a Volvo store when we took it over. It was strictly Volvo. And then we have a great Volvo following, and we have, you know, a technician that can handle it. And we got into Mercedes, and we had a Mercedes guy, and then we lost the Mercedes guy, so then that becomes a challenge. And again, our guys can work on everything, but, you know, it's hard to be quote-unquote expertise in something when you don't have that expert on staff anymore. And, you know, we lost our manager recently, who was a 31-year veteran of Volvo. So being pigeonholed is good if you have the guys, but it's much easier to be a general repair shop in all makes and all models with that talent level on board.
Well, I have so enjoyed getting together with you guys. It's been a lot of fun. I think you covered a really great area to talk about husband and wife and growth and branches and numbers, of course. Any final words for our audience, John, Karen?
What I get that question from guys, and plenty of them have asked, you know, you actually watched them grow over the years as well. But their first question was always, you know, where do you get the money? How do you do it? I don't have any money. Like anything else, where there's a will, there's a way. And there's so many ways to approach it. And we've done, I think, most of them at this point. But mainly we've done acquisitions, but we just did our first build-to-suit lease deal, which, again, you really don't need any money except for the equipment. And you don't have to buy all brand-new equipment. You can buy used equipment and get in there pretty cheap. But all you have to do is pay rent, and you're making money on day one. But, you know, we've done owner financing where a former bottom line group member of ours sold it to us, and the owner of the property financed the property. And so again, no money out of pocket. So there's ways to do it. We've borrowed money from SBA. We've borrowed money from family. There's all kinds of ways to do it. And when people tell me that they can't, I tell them, yes, they can, if they want to.
Powerful, powerful words. It was so well said. People feel they have to have all the money in order to grow, and that's just not true. And there's no way you would have amassed almost now your eighth store without leverage.
And, you know, one other thing, and I think Karen will attest to this, is that, you know, their first store isn't 100%, and it's never going to be 100%. So let me tell you.
Having multiple stores makes you streamline more. And
if you're waiting to have a perfect store before you open a second store, forget it. You'll never open it.
And the great story is that we'll get better when we open store two, and that doesn't happen.
It's a learning curve, but, you know, having a good process, it does help
you
get along. So.
It does. It helps. It helps having multiple stores because of the processes start to streamline. But every day, something new pops up that you're like, wow, yeah, I never dealt with that before. So it's challenging every day.
Any final words from you?
Well, I guess the only thing from my point of view that really stands out with taking on additional stores was how important it was for me to be there with John when we did go, or we went for that conference and on being multiple shop owners. When we left, it was something that we both were enthusiastic about, and we're able to have that conversation, the back and forth, the pros and cons. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And share the same enthusiasm. Where had one of us not gone, I don't know if the perspective would have been there and the motivation from the person that didn't go.
And, you know, John, it happens, you know, the husband goes, if the wife is or isn't in the business, it doesn't matter. The husband
doesn't matter.
Goes, it gets all juiced up and he comes back. He cannot share the feeling he got or the words that he heard as succinctly as if the spouse was there.
Right.
No matter how much I tell her, you know, I'm skiing down this mountain and it's a beautiful picture. You can take a video of it or a photograph of it. It's not the same as being there.
That's a great point, Karen.
And I think the inclination is to say no if you're not there, because it's a huge undertaking and it's hard to grasp that undertaking without being there and listening to other people who have already done it.
It's easier to stay safe.
And there's so much more dialogue that happens outside of the, you know, formal presentation of the meeting. The bathroom breaks and the coffee breaks, there's all that extra, if you will, John, this like hardener in body.
Absolutely, and talking to other people and, yeah, getting other people's opinions who have done it. So, yeah.
Hey, I so enjoyed this. John and Karen Manilis from Auto Care Plus and Euro Plus out in New England. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you for having us. Thank you, Cam.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.